Welcome, everybody, to Breaking Kayfabe. I am your host, Jeff Bowden. With me, my co-host from Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. I may have used that one before, Barry, Mr. Barry Rose, but because this is a special edition, Q&A edition of Breaking Kayfabe. Barry, you ready to go with some questions from the message board?
Oh, I'm super ready. This is one of my favorite episodes, much like when we did the last episode. You just absolutely love the unsolved mysteries, and so do I. I think they're fantastic. I think this is great because this is so interactive, and we get to interact with our Facebook group, but we actually get to, in a sense, bring them on the show in a way, as long as we remember to write down the names of the people asking the questions.
I have wrote down everyone's name but one person. And that person will be able to figure out who the fuck they are. So, you ready to dive right in, Barry, with some questions from our listeners?
I say we go for it.
Okay, first of all, our first question comes from a young lad named Ian Totten. Ooh, he's a sponsor of ours. That's why he fucking gets to go first. Show us the money, baby. All right, Ian wants to know, this is a question directed, I think, Barry, specifically to me. He wants to know, have you ever been in the courtroom in all your years in court with a serial killer? Kind of a disturbing question. Actually, the answer is yes and no. Case in point, recently, of course, the mass killings here. It's not a humorous topic. Mass killings here in Broward County in February, the old Stoneman Douglas High School here in Greater Parkland, Florida, which is a western suburb of Broward County. We had a hearing that I got called in on to clerk on an emergency basis on the Nicholas Cruz matter. Nicholas Cruz, of course, was the young man who is currently under investigation, been charged with the murders, I want to say, of 17 people, Barry. So I was there in a hearing that is still under wraps. I cannot talk about what was said in the hearing. He was not in the courtroom, though. So, Ian, that is your answer. I was involved in a hearing about the case, but young Mr. Nicholas Cruz wasn't there. Gee, I'm sorry. I missed him, Barry.
Are you sorry, though?
I really am not. So, question number two comes from a listener, not a message board person. Gary Baum wants to know, Barry, who was your favorite ECW character?
Where did you get this question if it didn't come from the Facebook group?
It's a guy I work with. I said, tell me a question.
Okay.
So, shout out to my boy Gary Baum from work.
Gary Baum, you dropped a bomb on me.
He is a listener.
He is, which is really, that's really the most important thing. So, favorite ECW character, does Terry Funk count? I mean, does that, is he?
You could say the Funker if you want.
Yeah, so really, if you're going to ask me a wrestling question 9 times out of 10, if I can respond with the name Terry Funk, I'm going to respond with it. I will say Terry Funk, Rob Van Dam, and then Sabu in that order. Not Sabu today, but Sabu from 25 years ago.
Really, not a big fan of Sabu today, are you?
No, I don't think I am. I don't think anybody in their right mind is. Whatever. Yeah, sure. I'll leave it at that.
I'm going my number one choice. I am going Raven. I really got a kick out of Scott Levy's character of Raven. I don't know who it was, Paul Lee's creation or if it was Scott's creation, but I found myself really drawn to that character. I thought it was really well done. The program with Tommy Dreamer, I was a big fan of. Well, I was not such a fan of the Raven Sandman thing where the kid was involved, but the Tommy Dreamer and then, Beulah was their girlfriend from when they were like 13. That was a very creative angle, I thought. So I'll go Raven first. Let's see. I like the character of Taz. I like the way that Paul Lee was able to convince people that Taz was some kind of world-class shooter. I thought he did a great job making that guy into a character that people were legitimately afraid of. And I think that's some top-notch booking there when you're able to convince people that this guy is some kind of UFC killer in the ring.
And that's what
a great booker is supposed to do. Okay, next question, Barry. I will tell the folks in advance that I prepped Barry for this one because this is one that involved a little bit of thought. This question came from let me see what the guy's name is here. I just wrote it down. Our Dream on Twitter. I don't know if this guy's on our group or not. He wants to know, give me your top 5 NXT matches in history, Barry. And since I will say that you are a much bigger NXT fan than I am, you've done a much deeper dive on the history of NXT. I'm going to let you give these choices. So give me your top 5 all-time NXT matches, Barry.
Yeah, absolutely, too. So I originally had a top 10, and I whittled it down to my top 5. This is a really hard one, too. This is because, every NXT pay-per-view, they offer high-quality matches. You're going to get 4 matches that can make this list, in my opinion, every single time out. Obviously, some are better than others. To that end, before I give you my top 5, I did not include any women's matches on here, and I probably should have. I don't know if they make my top 5. They certainly do make my top 10. That being said, my top 5 were last year's War Games, Sanity versus the Undisputed Era versus Authors of Pain. Dave Meltzer rated it 4.5 stars. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was better last year than it was this year. The fact that Alexander Wolfe was taken out and basically lied on the mat, his head wrapped as a referee tended to him because he was injured. It was a very dramatic match. The spots didn't seem quite as planned or choreographed as they were this year, though I still enjoyed it this year. The Revival versus DIY from TakeOver Toronto. Some people have said this was one of the best matches in the history of professional wrestling. I've heard best match ever in NXT. I believe it may have won Observer Match of the Year. It was fantastic. Meltzer also with the 4.5. Andrade Almas versus Johnny Gargano, TakeOver Philadelphia. I was not there earlier this year. Meltzer gave it 5 stars. It is unbelievable.
Now that match I did see, Barry. That was a fantastic match. I will agree with you.
So here's the weird thing, and I don't want to be a fucking parrot and say, what is the WWE doing? But Andrade Almas at this point is floundering in the WWE. I don't believe he's even been on TV the last couple of weeks. His TV appearances, he's doing jobs. He's in high profile matches, so he's not, he's not jobbing out in 30 seconds to somebody. But at the same time, he's not getting any wins. So unless they're building him up for something, this guy has a world of talent. It appears that in a sense they're using him wrong and fucking him over. He's gonna leave, and this guy can go anywhere and be a star. And my assumption is he wants to be a star on the big stage. He's fantastic. Johnny Gargano, wow. He's in 3 of my matches in my top 5. The next one, Gargano versus Ciampa, unsanctioned match from NXT TakeOver New Orleans. Meltzer, 5 stars. I think this was the best of their series of matches. And my number 1 match of all time, this is unbelievable when you stop and think about it, Jeff. Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne, TakeOver Chicago last year, 4.75 stars from Meltzer. These two guys are like 21 or 23 years old, and they're having almost a 5-star match. It was, if you've never seen it, it was absolutely incredible. I'm a big fan of the British style of wrestling. I have watched this match more than once, and you can watch it and learn every time that you see it. The fact that these guys are so young, their future's bright.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do, Barry, since I have never seen that match. I'm going to write, you said Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne?
Versus Pete Dunne. It was NXT TakeOver Chicago last year, 2017. I think it was the first time I ever saw Bate. We had seen Dunne a couple of times, but I think it was the first time I'd ever seen Bate. I want to say 21 or 22, and just at a different level when you see this style of wrestling. Just really incredible. Well, and the weird thing about it is, to me, Pete Dunne's obviously been getting a huge push in NXT. The fact that he was headlining in the last War Games match, it shows you that, okay, they get that this guy's a world-class athlete. Tyler Bate, I believe, was injured for 4, 6, 8 months, something like that. But I would think these two are just, this is the future of professional wrestling.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do, folks. I am not going to say it's going to be next week or the week after, but within the next few weeks, I think we're going to talk about that match here on Breaking Kayfabe so I can take a look at it and we can both discuss it based on the recommendation of Mr. Barrence Rose. That's his British name, Barrence. Now, next question, Barry. Here is a very, very good question from the group. Chris Zaha, our old friend with the newly shorn bald head, as of the day of this recording, he wants to know, Barry, what is your favorite brand of TP?
Yeah, his newly shorn bald head. Yeah, he's always he's, guy's always been he's been bald forever. That as far as I know, he may have just gotten a haircut, but
apparently
let me go on a little bit of a rant about
Harry Rose. That's why he's going bald. He apparently
really,
idolizes.
Of course, that's yeah. You know, if you're managing Mariano's in a Chicago suburb, who wouldn't idolize me? The toilet paper to me, Jeff, is a fucked up thing, and I'll tell you why. Because when you go to and we go to Sam's Club to buy our toilet paper, so we get the gigantic. In bulk, and it's like $20. You're paying $20 for paper to wipe your ass with, and the fact that it's a necessity, you know, it is a necessity. There's no way you're going to get around that. Toilet paper is completely overpriced, and it's some sort of fucking scam. To that end, what about when you go to businesses, Jeff? And whether it's a hotel or a restaurant or a department store, and you just have to go to the bathroom, and you get this single ply sandpaper to put on your ass, that irritates the shit out of me. And I got to be honest, that paper is so cheap, and that's why they're doing it. Obviously, they're not spending any money. I find that just a massive insult. To that end, Cottonelle, just the word cotton. Just makes me smile. So Cottonelle is my number one choice, probably followed by Scott.
Okay, so the question is, Barry, as you're talking in very fevered terms about being at these restaurants or these businesses where they got the single ply and that it really irritates your ass, do you mean that literally or in a figurative sense?
I mean it both. I mean it. You know, Jeff, we've all experienced this. And when you go to a place,
this is a very important topic. Thank you, Chris.
It really is. Every time I go to Sam's Club and I said these to my wife always rolls her eyes at me, but I know the group understands. It's terrible. It's terrible when they're spending no money on toilet paper. You can go into a hotel, and let's not say a four-star hotel, but not a shithole either. You know, just maybe a Hilton Garden Inn, just a normal, a regular hotel. You go in, and they've got single-ply, pardon me, I'm getting very, very excited about this, single-ply sandpaper for your ass. And I find it highly offensive. Spend the extra few dollars just to get a decent toilet paper. At the end of the year, I don't know how much you're going to save, but it isn't worth it. Give us a decent toilet paper. Nobody wants to take what's essentially copy paper for your copier machine to wipe your ass with. It's wrong. It's wrong.
You're damn right it's wrong. Now, here's my choice, Barry. I am going my number one TP brand, Angel Soft. Think about that name. Think about that name, Angel Soft. You're down there, and you're cleaning it up, and it's Angel Soft, buddy. That's all I'm going to say. Now, I will add to this a very distinguished conversation that when I go visit my parents, okay, my parents are fans of the Cottonelle, which you mentioned. Cottonelle, I believe, maybe three-ply. It's not single. It's not because that is some that's like wiping your ass with a pillowcase, Barry.
Yes, and yes, I love it.
You're down there and you're doing your business, but you're like, damn, you know, this is just Cottonelle soft. And then, of course, my parents wonder why they have problems with their toilet clogging up, but that's another story at the time. But so I'm going to go Angel Soft and then Cottonelle. Barry, you're going. What were your choices again? Cottonelle and Scott.
Cottonelle and Scott, but I like Angel Soft too. I like any of that. It's more cottony. Look, you bring up a great point right there. And Jeff, as I like to say, you're 100% correct, Jeff. If it's clogging up your toilet, it's a good toilet paper then. Sure, there's the added headache of having to plunge, but at the same time, it's a quality toilet paper if it's stopping it up.
Exactly. And what's really the more important thing? Now, of course, collateral issue, Barry, over the top or underneath? How do you do your TP?
Underneath.
That's the only answer. That's a question that wasn't asked. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Actually, now that I think about it, somebody did ask that, but I
did not
write their fucking name down. Excuse me. So,
Mark Hertweck. I know that I always I almost break his name in two, Hertweck, but Mark Hertweck, I believe, was the guy that actually asked that because he even put up a diagram.
Yes, I did see that. Right. So, Mark, thank you very much for your collateral question regarding TP and the usages therein. Next question, Barry, comes from Daniel Williams. Daniel says, Barry, you can time travel to one card that you've never seen. Barry, where are you going as you travel back in time?
Yeah, that opens up. That's a great question, first off, because as a wrestling fan and somebody that's been a wrestling fan for the majority of my life, what a fantastic question. I am going to travel back to Houston, Texas, 1973. I am going to sit ringside as Jack Briscoe wins the NWA World's Heavyweight title from Harley Race.
That is a great answer. I had not thought about that. I was thinking that my choice might be 1969 Gasparilla, Florida.
And fantastic.
Terry Funk win the title from Gene Kaniski. I was also thinking 1987 August, a Summer Night Fever in Tokyo, new versus now. I've seen those on videotape, but the electricity of the crowd that night was something I really would have liked to have been a part of, Barry.
Yeah, and that Gasparilla, that's a great option right there as well. And Dory Funk Jr., we got to get him back on the show too, because he was so great in discussing his time in Florida and you know, his career. Obviously, he was in Japan last week. Did you see that?
I did see that. Yes, I did.
Yeah, he's cracking late 70s, cracking the whip, and I think he even put somebody in the spinning toe hold. But that was a great choice. There's, you know, I didn't even figure, if we look at Japan, and you're 100% right again, that really opens up the gates as well. I would stick with Briscoe. I'm a huge Briscoe fan. Being there, seeing a world title change too, as you picked, a world title change back in our day, Ozzy got really excited.
Yeah, Ozzy's a big Briscoe fan.
Huge Briscoe fan and a huge title change fan, but you know, the world title in those days changed hand once every 2 to 5 years, so it was a big deal when it occurred. And your choice was great. I would stick with Briscoe, but probably the runner up is the Gasparilla card from 69.
Yeah. So next question, we're going Matt Kovacs wants to know, have either of you ever been arrested, Barry?
In this country?
Something you want to tell us about?
Sure. This country or just in general?
Oh, all over. We'll talk about that one little incident, Barry.
Yeah. So I've never been arrested. There were, in my youth, a couple of instances. There was a time in South Florida where I was probably a hair's breadth away from being arrested. And then there was a time in Mexico. Where I almost got arrested. That would have been 1985, and that was a little frightening, I got to admit, because the thought of going to a Mexican jail I bet I would be on a different life path currently had that actually occurred.
Barry, your swarthy good looks would have made you the belle of the ball in that Mexican prison, my friend.
And that was which now is fine. Like now I sit here and I go, yeah, if I had to go to jail now, I'd be absolutely fine. Nobody's going to want to hit the old guy now. But yeah, and you know, 35 years ago, 33 years ago, frightening what would have happened to me. But no, you can search me on Google. There is no mugshots anywhere for me, which is amazing, right?
Well, I will tell you that the closest I came, I don't know that I was actually arrested. I was detained, shall we say. I'm not sure if I've ever mentioned this story on this show before, Barry. When I went to Japan in 1987, in December of that year, to see the tag team tournament with the Melts, I went over there and decided that I wanted to go back to the town where I was born. I believe I've discussed that I was born in Yokosuka, Japan, which is spelled Yokosuka. My dad was in the Navy at the time. And so I wanted to go back. You know, at this point, it was like 26 years later, and I wanted to see the hospital where I was born. So I still had, my dad was long since retired from the military, still had my military ID card. And so I wanted to see if I could get on the base just to take a picture of the hospital where I was born, and I could take it back to my mom and dad. Hey, took a picture of the hospital where I was born. Mom and dad, a little treat for them. You know, it's probably really cheap and wanted to give it to them for a Christmas gift. But so when I get to the base and I go up, and my friend and I went there. And so I walked up to the main gate and I told the shore patrol officer, that's the Navy police, what my situation was. He goes, oh, go ahead and go on in there and they'll talk to you in there and see if they can give you a pass for the base. So I go in there. I'm talking to the people behind the desk, da-da-da-da. I look, and as I'm waiting, all of a sudden I see the old shore patrol come up with the lights of flashing, Barry. And I'm like, what the hell is this all about? They come in, and they thought I was trying to scam my way on the base. And I was sitting there thinking what it would be like calling my father, the retired commander, and saying, Dad, I'm being held in Japan by the Navy. What can you help me with there? And they realized what it was there. And then, of course, naturally, they told me that the hospital had been torn down 10 years before, which made the trip kind of worthless. But that was my experience trying to get on the base. to take a picture of the place where I was born. Did not end well. They sent me on my way, and believe me, I was happy to get the hell out of there, Barry.
Yeah, foreign jail. I mean, look, jails in our country scare the shit out of me, but a foreign jail? Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, so, okay. Next question. Well, speaking of Mark Hertwig, here's another question from Mark. Change one event in wrestling history, Barry. What you going with?
Yeah, Mark on the board twice at this point. So another excellent question, too. And I like some of the wrestling questions because I think they're unique. These are not questions that everybody, you know, these aren't the norm. I would change Hogan winning the WWF title because in my mind, and again, this is a fantasy deal kind of here, but had Hogan not gotten the title and they not brought him in, there's a possibility that maybe Ric Flair could have been on a bigger stage. And Ric Flair, even though in the WWF, granted, he's not going to have these 60-minute classics, maybe against a guy like Steamboat, though Steamboat was there, obviously, a couple years later. But at the same time, it would have changed, I think, the commercialization and the where it was geared towards an audience of children. It would have been more of a wrestling show. And considering that, you know, even though Ric Flair was in the number two promotion, in our minds, the number one, but from a marketing standpoint and a saturation standpoint, WWF, WWE has always been number one. They're in more homes. There were more shows out there, more TV shows, et cetera. I think having Ric Flair on a bigger stage would have been fantastic. So I think that's what I would have gone with.
Okay, here's my fantasy booking scenario. Early 1987, Bill Watts sells his promotion to Jim Crockett. Jim Crockett takes in all the UWF guys, fires Dusty Rhodes as his booker, makes Bill Watts his booker, and we have a UWF versus NWA series. Boom. There we go. Ted DiBiase versus Ric Flair for a year, and Bill Watts is there, so Ted doesn't take the job, at least for a moment, doesn't take the job for Vince, so we get at least a year's worth of DiBiase versus Flair matches. I would
like
that
one too. Yeah, that's actually really, really good.
Okay, next question comes from Floyd McDaniel. Barry, top foreign city that you've ever been in?
Floyd McDaniel, who lives in Japan, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so interesting one. So it came down to three for me, and I'll give you three, starting at number three to number one. Number three was Mexico City. I was in Mexico City for the first time this year. I had been in three other cities in Mexico previously, but never Mexico City. It was, you know, I was nowhere near where the crime was. At least I didn't see it. I didn't experience it. Thank God. But what a great city Mexico City is. Number two is London. I spent, I've been to London three times, but I spent 3 weeks there a few years back, and I absolutely did it before I was married, obviously, because now I only go to Florida. Yeah, exactly. I only go to Florida now. But London was a great city, but I was in Paris, also three times, and I spent, I guess, two and a half, a little less than 3 weeks in Paris, and it was great because we didn't do all of the tourist shit. I was with somebody that was a resident of Paris. So I got to go to places that it wasn't like and I saw the Eiffel Tower and all that stuff and, you know, in the museums and all that. But at the same time, we got to go to areas that, you know, a lot of tourists weren't always going to. And, have you ever read, Henry Miller, like Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn?
Only on Seinfeld.
Exactly. So it was, you know, a lot of his works take place in Paris at the turn of the century. And it just, to me, if, you know, and I know we've discussed this, but that would be an era that I just would have loved to have been in, turn of the century in Paris. Just amazing. Just, you know, there was a lot of freedom. There was culture. The women were smoking hot. Yeah. Super cool to me.
I will say my favorite cities outside the country, my trip to Tokyo still resonates with me. Tokyo is just an amazing, amazing city to visit. I don't know if I've discussed this, Barry. My father was stationed in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And we did two tours down there. And at the time that I was down there, it was kind of like living, dare I say, in small town America, because the base was home to about 7,000 people. So there was one high school, there was one junior high school slash middle school, I guess you could say, and one elementary school. And all the kids that were from the military people there, they all went to the same school. So you got to know everybody in your school. And it was really a interesting community, you know, growing up there. And my parents and my sister just went to a reunion. Guantanamo, the nickname for it was Gitmo. And they just went to a Gitmo reunion that took place, I want to say, up in Jacksonville or something. And apparently on Facebook, there's a whole Facebook community of people that used to reside in Guantanamo and Gitmo.
Wow.
Which is, you know, of course, now where they keep the Al-Qaeda prisoners. So, yeah, it was kind of an interesting. So, Barry, let me ask you. Name me a foreign country that you've never been to that you'd like to go to.
Japan. So as you bring it up, it's always been kind of, you know, for the last, maybe the last 20, 30 years, kind of a dream in a sense to go to Japan. And our good friend Eric Chulminski goes literally every year. And every year I'm like thinking, shit, maybe this is the year. And then, of course, I've got a kid going to college next year and then one going 3 years after. So approaching that with my wife, I don't see that being a great conversation.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so as long as I am married, I don't see myself going to Japan.
Well, you know, it's, you know, interesting that you say that, but because I was just talking with the great Brian Last the other day, and he mentioned that Dave Meltzer has talked in The Observer about the fact that he is taking his son to Japan, I want to say in January, and I don't know if they're going to hit the Tokyo Dome show or if it's a strictly wrestling free week, but he's taking it. His young son has been asking him for apparently for years to go to Japan, and Dave has been promising him. So now Dave is finally taking his son. And I think that's a pretty cool trip to be able to take your son or your daughter outside the country to look at another country and the way it works. I would say Japan is certainly up there. I'd love to go back, having, you know, it's been 30 years. I'd love to be able to go to one of the New Japan shows. I don't want to go to a Tokyo Dome show because that's too big, but I'd love to go to a Wrestle Kingdom show at one of the regular arenas, sit with our boy Eric Chulminski, sit with our girl Ashley, and, you know, all the people from our Facebook group, and sit there and watch, you know, Okada and Naito and Tanahashi, some of those guys. I think that'd be really good stuff. My second country, I've always wanted to go to the Emerald Isle to see the old country where my my family's from. I'd like to go to Ireland. I think that'd be a really cool trip. I've had some friends that have been able to go over there and just really raved about how great a country that is to visit, Bear.
Yes. Let me ask you a question, too. Have you ever seen this movie? Because you're talking about the small town community on the base. Have you ever seen this movie, Matinee? It was 1993. Stars John Goodman. Takes place, I believe, in the Keys, like Key West. It's in the Keys area, but they are on a base. The movie primarily is all these young kids are living on a base. And I was curious if you've ever seen the movie. How authentic was that?
I did not see that movie. I think I've heard of it though.
Oh, so, it's a great
but,
movie.
Yeah. But okay. Next question, Barry, Brian Huff. Brian Huff, has he ever written into this show and asked to have a question read before, Barry? I don't think so. Brian Huff wants to know, Barry, what is your unlimited finances, unlimited budget? What is your dream car, my friend?
I love this one, too. And I love it because this is not a question of like a Tesla or a Porsche or something like that. So it's a 1964 Chevy Malibu. And why is that, Jeff? It's the car from my favorite movie of all time, Repo Man. And I actually had an opportunity in 1986 or 85 to actually purchase this car from somebody that I worked with. They had a car. They had a 64 Chevy Malibu. It was in good shape and common sense, which I really had zero common sense back in those days. Common sense went over and said, you know, if this car has any issues, you know, I'm fucking clueless when it comes to working on cars. I'm screwed. So I said, you know what? I would be better off not getting it. But this being a different day, a different era right now, and in unlimited finances and resources, 64 Chevy Malibu.
Okay. My unlimited budget car would be a Porsche 935 with the fin on the back. That was the car that, for whatever reason, I don't know, for the last 25 years, I've always just thought that was the ultimate car that I'd love to have. If I want to go old school, I'm going to go a 1959 Chevy Corvette, because one of the movies from my youth that I remember watching with my brother is a movie called Hot Rods to Hell. And that car in that movie was a 59 Corvette, and it always stuck with me, Barry. And whenever I see, you know, one of these classic car shows, or, you know, the Mecum car auctions, which are seemingly on a 24-hour loop on certain stations, and I see an old Corvette getting auctioned off, I always flash back to the memories of that movie, sitting and watching with my brother one Saturday night, and just a classic car.
Yeah, definitely too. It's a, and I like Corvettes as too. When I was a kid, I always wanted one. But yes, unlimited finances. What was the car in Ferris Bueller's Day Off that they put into reverse and it wound up crashing through and then crashing down to the ground?
No, I know that was a Porsche. I don't know what the model of the Porsche was. I want to say it was a 928 maybe. I'm not Mr. Porsche. I actually, we have somebody on the board who is a Porsche guy that I work with, named Dan Cantor, who remodels and redoes old Porsches. I'll have to ask him. He'll remember that, as well, I'm sure, every other person on the board that's ever watched Ferris Bueller, who are now sitting there going, you fucking idiots, you don't know what kind of Porsche it was. So, I'll defer to you people. Okay, Barry, next question comes from M.D. Tyler. Old Mad Dog Tyler, as we call him. He wants to know, Barry, what is your favorite twist ending to a movie?
Another good one right there. So I have several. We talked a couple of weeks ago with the Michael Douglas movies about The Game. That's a great twist ending. The entire movie is a twist, so I don't know if I can just say the ending with that. There was a movie that came out about a decade ago called Orphan. Did you ever see that one?
I did not. I mean, I know the movie you're talking about. I didn't see it, though.
Yeah, that had a hell of a twist ending. I'm not going to ruin it if anybody has never seen the movie, even though it's been a decade. The Usual Suspects, Kevin Spacey is a no-no currently to talk about, but I did love the ending of the movie. The Sixth Sense, there was a twist ending to it. At the same time, I think a lot of us were able to figure it out partially through the movie. I know why. That being said, my favorite twist ending for a movie of all time, Planet of the Apes, and I'm talking about the original. When they stumble, and again, it's been 50 years, so I don't know if I'm ruining it for anybody, but when they stumble upon the Statue of Liberty at the very end, and then you realize exactly what happened and where they are, blew me away the first time I saw it.
Yeah, that was pretty good stuff. I'm going, let's see, twist endings. How about, I believe, Empire Strikes Back? Luke, I am your father. That was pretty good stuff. My wife hates these kind of movies. I love movies where you get the sense that the bad guy got away with it. I'm thinking of Matt Damon and the Talented Mr. Ripley. I'm thinking of Arlington Road Barry, why am I drawing a brain? Tim
Meadows.
Tim
Meadows.
Arlington Rose. The guy from Shawshank.
Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins was in Arlington Road. And that was a really good movie. I really liked that. Talented Mr. Ripley, Arlington Road. But you were right. I was also thinking Sixth Sense. That was a really good twist ending. So that, you know, at the time when I first went and saw it, of course, you were like, what the fuck? But now, of course, you watch it again and you're like, why the hell didn't I see this coming? So, okay. Barry, Spencer Benson, who, dare I say, we may be hearing from again later in this episode, wants to know, what is your favorite video game?
Sure, that's easy too. So air hockey doesn't really count, right?
For the purpose of this, we'll say no.
Okay, because do I love air hockey, and I used to belong to a group of friends, my squad when I was younger, and air hockey was our game, and we were so vicious that you were allowed to do anything from the puck going into the slot. And we used to actually put our forearms in front of it, and we would take these shots to our forearms from the puck. We would all leave bruised and bloody, but it's what boys do, right?
It was extreme air hockey.
It was extreme, and it was a lot of fun. And there were times we used to even throw the puck at each other. Like, we would, anything was allowed. We were fucking nuts as kids, which was great. It's the way how you should be when you're a kid. But I think my favorite technical video game was a game called Time Pilot. And Time Pilot was a game I discovered in the early 80s, and by 1984, I was so proficient in this game that I could actually beat the game and go in a full cycle in one play. And there was a day, and I'll never forget it, it was 25 cents, you know, to play a video game, which is absolutely absolutely amazing when you think about it. And Jeff, you and I did we talk about this on air yesterday when we were recording, or off air? but at the 163rd Street Shopping Center, there was a video game arcade. And I put a quarter in, and I was there for an hour and 10 minutes on one game, Time Pilot, and I went through the full revolution. And I walked away, and I said, that's probably it right there. I said, I don't think I can ever top this, beat this, do this ever again, but I did it. And Time Pilot was my game. It's a very rudimentary game. Essentially, do you know what Time Pilot is?
I have no idea. I have to be honest. I'm going to fully admit the whole video game craze completely passed me by. I was there, you know, with Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man and all that other shit, but I just never got into it. You know, when I go to an arcade or a Dave and Buster's, the ones sure. that I play the ones where you ski down the mountain and where you're driving through the city, driving a Corvette or the car you pick out. Those are the two games I like. The whole video games things, I just don't do that. I'll be honest with you, after you're done talking, I reached out to my kids and said, tell me what the hell video games you like so I can answer this question. So go ahead, finish your story about Time Pilot.
Yeah, and a lot of these games, too. I mean, this is definitely – I'm not a stay-at-home gamer. My son has a PlayStation. He's got an Xbox. We used to have a Wii. I believe the Wii doesn't really exist anymore. But yeah, I was never a gamer at home. But in the 70s and then going into the 80s, going to an arcade with $4 or $5 to me was a joy. I absolutely loved it. And Time Pilot was just a great thing. We used to have – when I first moved to New York City, there were arcades in Times Square. So literally right next to the porno palaces of Times Square, there were video arcades. And there were some that would have 1,000 different games and 1,000 different machines in there. And I could get on, finances were limited. So I could get on a game and literally spend 30 to 60 minutes on one quarter. That's a great bargain right there. So Time Pilot was always one. There was a karate game too. And, I forget what this karate game was
called.
Street
Fighter?
But it wasn't Street. It wasn't, no, because that was actually real popular. Mine was, I think it was like the first karate game out there. And if you moved the two different joysticks, which is really the first time we've ever said the word joystick.
I think so.
I'm breaking kayfabe. If you move the two different joysticks, you can make them do all these different flips and kicks and punches and shit. And I learned how to do all that, and I could kill some good time on that. But going to an arcade was so much fun for me. Staying at home and doing it, not even close.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know why, but that whole – I have never owned a PlayStation or any of those other games. That was always a go-to gift for my kids when they were growing up. And they can spend hours in the bedroom. And it was funny because I can remember my son and my daughter getting in fights because my son – part of the Asperger's thing is he's very rule-structured and rule-orientated. And if he thinks that you are breaking the rules – that's the only time you've ever seen Andy really just kind of lose it and get crazy mad. And I would pull him aside and I'd say, why you're getting upset about a video game? And he would like calm down. And I said, go back in, play the game. You got beat once, go back and try to beat, and it was just, and I look back on it and laugh because, it would make him so crazy when his sister would beat him at a video game. So that being said, Barry, I reached out. First of all, the wife says Galaga and Space Invaders. That was her two go-to games.
Jeff Galaga. Galaga.
Oh, okay. I like to call it Galaga.
Galaga. You put it like a Hispanic.
No, because there is a syrup out there for pancakes, waffles, and French toast that's called Alaga. So that's why I call it Galaga. So whether it's Galaga or Galaga, who fucking cares? Anyway, reached out to the kids. What are your favorite video games? And my daughter says Halo series and Borderlands. My son-in-law likes Call of Duty, and Andy is into role-playing games and says, who fucking cares? So that's the answer to that question, Barry. Next question comes from James Young. Barry, what is your favorite go-to breakfast meat?
Yeah, so in order from
is it Scrapple?
No, Scrapple, I hate Scrapple. That's a great debate for a lot of people. Scrapple being a Pennsylvania, I guess it's Amish, it's Pennsylvania Dutch. I don't like the texture and I don't like the taste. Some people just rave about it. Our good friend Jamie Ward will tell you, and I think he even posted in our group a few weeks back about it. I'm not a Scrapple guy whatsoever. Pork roll, though, which is native to New Jersey, the neighboring state of Pennsylvania. Pork roll is kind of like Canadian ham, Canadian bacon in a sense. But I like pork roll a lot. I'm a big sausage guy, but bacon. I mean, really? It's bacon. It's, you know, it's the, it's one of the primary food groups. It's bacon. I went yesterday to Whole Foods, and when I got this box, and I didn't even show this. I mean, I'm so fucking unhealthy, Jeff. It's frightening, but I went and I got 6 donuts from Curiosity Donuts, and then I went to the breakfast salad bar, and I got a quarter pound of bacon, pre-cooked bacon, just to have in the house ready to go. So I'm living now on bacon and donuts, but bacon, 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 and bacon.
Okay, so I'm going to say, first of all, sausage patty. I like a good sausage patty. I don't like that brown and serve shit. I like a good sausage patty served at a restaurant. It's got a little bit of bite to it. Also bacon, very good product. So here, very good question, I thought, Barry. Your bacon, do you like it crispy or on the chewy side?
Oh, no, no, it's crispy. That the undercooked, chewy thing. Now, the way bacon is supposed to, at least the way that I was taught, is bacon is supposed to be cooked to the point of just before it's burning. And if it burns and it's black, it's not good. However, if you get it to the point where you can hold it and it stands up straight, the bacon has been cooked perfectly. Don't tell me you're an undercooked, chewy guy.
Well, I'll tell you why I get a chewy bacon, okay? Because there are 2 other members of my family that I've yet to talk about who are big fans of the chewier bacon, and that is Gunny and Molly. Both my dogs are big fans of the chewy bacon. I talked to Gunny this morning. I said, Gun, son, what do you think about this? He looked at me quite frankly and said, Dad, you shouldn't even have to ask. I like the chewy bacon. So I had a good discussion with my boy Gunny this morning.
Jeff, I am looking at my watch right now. Do you know what time it is?
What? Before we go there, let me just, does Ozzy favor the chewy over the crispy? Please tell me you give Ozzy the bacon occasionally.
Oh, I walked in the house with the donuts and the bacon yesterday, and they said, Ozzy, I have a treat for you. He was the first one to get the bacon. And he gets a little bit of the chewier bacon because I think it's easier for him to eat. Sure. I think he's happy with either. I don't see an issue with either, but I would think Ozzy actually prefers the slightly undercooked chewy bacon.
And before we get off this topic, let me just say, and I believe I might have mentioned this a couple months ago, the thick cut bacon is extremely good. And we go to this place, haven't been there in a while. It's down off of Federal and Hillsborough. They have a bacon that is marinated in maple syrup overnight. And cow, is it off the chain delicious? I can't remember the name of the place. If I think of it, I'll say it before the end of the show. But yeah, that's some really, really good stuff. Okay, Barry, now tell me what
hold it. So if now if we're on a bacon conversation, we're good for the next hour. But so two types of a hotel bacon, which is the thick cut bacon, is really the way to go. I do like the thin, like Oscar Mayer bacon, because it's very easy to eat. But if you're looking for something like a sandwich, maybe, or even just, you know, breakfast, whatever it is, there are two types of bacon I could recommend. One is if you go to Fresh Market, and I know there's a Fresh Market near you because they're all over the state of Florida, there they offer this black pepper thick cut bacon. It's a little pricier. It's actually in their meat case, so it's not already prepackaged or anything. But you go in, get a half pound of that, fry that up perfectly. It's fantastic. Whole Foods, and Whole Foods, also known as Whole Paycheck, super expensive, but they do this Black Forest bacon, which has got pepper and sugar on the outside. And when you cook it, it caramelizes the bacon. I want to say it's $10 for a pound, so it's not cheap. At the same time, holy shit, is this stuff good.
The other place, the place I mentioned that has the really good bacon, they also have grits where they mix in bits of bacon bits. Like, you know, from the, that's sometimes, except for the place being so far away, trust me, brother, I'd be hitting that place every damn weekend just for the stinking bacon.
Yeah. Grits, thumbs up or thumbs down, Jeff?
Oh, please. I'm a child of the South. Thumbs way the hell up on grits.
Thumbs way up. Yeah. I love grits too. I like cheesy grits. I like buttery grits.
Buttery grits are the best. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. Tell us what time it is, Barry.
It is time. It's everybody's, except for Mark Hurtwerdweck, I believe. He's not a big fan, and I saw his comment yesterday.
Let us just say that for you, the dear listener, you are now being told I think Florida Man is going to take a little bit of a sabbatical for a while, because here's one of the problems that we have, folks, is we try to come up with these crazy stories for you every week. And you know, when we've got a story in the bank and we're getting ready to use it, and then someone posts it on the Facebook page, well, we got to scratch that one off the list. And, you know, as much as we love people posting these funny, hilarious stories about people doing stupid shit, it kind of takes away, and it's like a bit of overkill, like on a game we may have played previously that we're going to think about bringing back. But for now, after this episode, Florida Man or not is going to take a bit of a sabbatical. Barry, take it from there.
Yeah, and it's not going to go away forever. Just as Jeff said, the sabbatical is probably the right way. We're tossing around also. It may be alternating and maybe doing 1 week the game that we used to play. What was that called, Jeff?
I'm not going to say right now.
Gotcha. And then Florida Man. And then we did Kayfabe Theater, I think, 3 or 4 episodes back. That was well received. I actually had a lot of fun with that. If we could only find stories that we could do Kayfabe Theater on, that would make a return. But when this week came up, I had 5 stories. 2 of those stories then appeared in our group. I had to go right back, and I had to find 2 more stories. However, I was able to find a story that I did not see posted anywhere. And I'm going to lead with that one, Jeff. Deep breath. A man tried to help his legless girlfriend evade police capture by hiding her in a plastic tote bag, only to be foiled because a cop saw the whole thing. Crystal Lee Anderson, 39 years old, who lost her legs to injuries from a 2015 gun battle with cops, was on the run after skipping out on a court date where she was standing trial for armed kidnapping and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on a law enforcement officer stemming from the 2015 incident, according to a local newspaper. When deputies and U.S. Marshals came knocking at her boyfriend, John Robert Carr Jr.'s home on Tuesday, the 48-year-old man claimed Anderson wasn't there. Catch is, one of the officers spied him through a bedroom window, cramming the 4-foot-tall woman in a plastic bin moments earlier. Sheriffs arrested the couple, it was reported. This is a great story, Jeff, because if you have a legless girlfriend, you want to stick her in a plastic tote and then just ship her out of the house. Jeff, did this occur in the state of Florida or not?
First of all, a couple things. Number one, this is in the pantheon. This may be in the top 5 stories you've ever come up with.
there you go.
Yeah. First of all, Crystal. Why is it that these women that get Crystal is a name that seems to cause a lot of arrests. So, you know, you're naming your daughter Crystal. Okay. You're naming your daughter after a cheap burger joint. Okay. So chances are she's not going to be the first lady of the United States down the road or, you know, Queen of England or Queen Crystal, you know. So, you know, when you first started talking about the legless girl who's charged with many felony counts, you know, the first thing that came to my mind, Barry, was that famous episode of the X-Files with the lady that lived under the bed. Was it Home? That famous episode of the X-Files.
We
talked about. Yes. So I got an image of the woman that lived on the cart under the bed. So this story, however, Barry, I'm going to say is not Florida. I'm going to guess that this is a story because Home took place in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, Barry?
Actually, Pennsylvania is known for legless women everywhere, I can tell you.
That commits felonious assault, yes.
Yeah. I go shopping all the time, and there's just legless people. Jeff, this is a Florida story.
Really?
Believe it or not. Yeah, this actually took place in Winter Haven. Beautiful Winter Haven, Florida. You can go there, and there's colonies of legless women in plastic totes everywhere.
If you're looking to hook up with a legless broad, apparently that's the place to go.
That is. So, Jeff, story number 2. And continuing on a theme here, Jeff, a man who has no hands and only speaks.
Are you going for the disabled this week, Barry?
I'm going for the amputees. This is our special amputee holiday episode. A man who has...
We're reaching out, no pun intended, for for the different aspects of our listening audience. We're trying to...
We really are twisted. This is really a foul, twisted podcast.
Breaking kayfabe on amputees. we are disturbed.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to put this on sabbatical at this point. I'm really enjoying this one.
This is our own kayfabe theater right here.
All right, this is kayfabe theater. I got to get some composure here.
Okay, go ahead.
I got a couple of tears out of my eyes right now. All right. It's actually going to get better, too, which is hard to believe, but it's even going to get better. A man who has no hands and only speaks Swahili is...
right there. Poor guy. His face is... Really?
Oh, fuck.
Handless and he speaks Swahili? I can't imagine why this guy would have problems.
This is one... I got to admit, too, so this was one through Snopes.
You may have topped the first story just with the opening line.
We've got a guy who speaks Swahili with no hands, but wait till you hear what he did. If I can only make this through the story. All right, I'm a deep breath.
If they haven't turned off the show by now, they're not going to.
I was
going
to say, people are now switching over to see what the 605 is up to. Fuller's talking about his story, you know.
Listen to McAdam's show. Let's go.
All right. I'm going to deep breath. I'm going to make it through this story. A man who has no hands and only speaks Swahili is accused of chucking. All right. I may have to move on to a different story. All right.
You're a professional broadcaster, Barry. Well, come on.
We're nothing. We're nothing if not professional. Fuck this. I'm doing this. A man who has no hands and only speaks Swahili is accused of chucking a boulder through a window of a KFC. So he pulled a Ken Patera misaida. Yes, except he has no hands and speaks Swahili.
I don't know if Patera speaks Swahili.
Employees of the fried chicken joint say that on Friday they saw Kofi something really African allegedly used his arms to toss a volleyball-sized rock at the windows. Mabaraja Maji, 46, also allegedly grabbed a brick and hurled it through a drive-through window. An employee told reporters that earlier in the day, Mabaraja Maji chased a woman into the restaurant only to be punched by another customer who was reportedly protecting the woman, this news source reported. The punch could have been what sent him into a rock-throwing rage, the employee said. Mabaraja Maji spoke through a translator at his arraignment on Monday. So you got a guy that has no hands, speaks only Swahili, and threw a volleyball-sized boulder through the window as well as a brick. That's pretty incredible when you stop and think about it, Jeff. Regardless of where this took place, this is a great fucking story. Did this take place in Florida or not Florida?
Oh, first of all, this may have even topped that. This is some really strong stuff. Here's my question. As someone who's worked in the court system, our boy Eric Cholminsky also works in the court system. I want to know how difficult it was to find that Swahili interpreter. The court interpreter's office, they put out the call for the Swahili interpreters, and God forbid it should be a person who only speaks Swahili in sign language, because apparently this guy would not have been able to help out. Boom! That's a cheap shot. That's a cheap shot. I'm going to say I have never heard this story. It is absolutely epic. I can't believe you topped the first story with the legless woman, but you did. I can't believe this is a Florida story, Barry.
And it's not. And regardless of, again, it's – so where would you – so knowing what you know about this story – where would you think this story occurred? If it occurred in the U.S., where would it actually occur?
Just because of the whole Swahili nature, I'm going to guess a bigger city, a New York, Philadelphia, Chicago kind of thing.
No, Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places.
Well, of course. He was an extra on Breaking Bad or something. I don't know.
Right? Yeah. Lost his arms in a meth fire. Exactly. All right.
All he said was Eisenberg, I think.
Eisenberg. Yeah. So, story number three, Jeff. This
maybe our longest segment ever of Florida Man or Not.
Possibly. Well, if it's taking a vacation after this, then we had to give it a great send-off.
The least we could do.
Edwin Toberta, 35, was arrested for allegedly having sex with an inflatable pool raft by the side of the road, Fox News report said. This is the fourth time Toberta has been arrested for this kind of offense. In 2011, Tilberto was caught with his pants down in an alley with his neighbor's pink inflatable raft. He went to jail, but was arrested again in 2013 for having sex with the exact same raft, which had inexplicably not been thrown out.
So wait, was this his raft or his neighbor's raft?
His neighbor's. And his neighbors then cleaned up the raft. And
we can only hope.
Yeah, the same raft. The 2013 offense occurred at Tilberto's own home, but he was charged with and pleaded guilty to public indecency because it happened within view of children during the day. It is unclear if Tilberto's most recent alleged offense took place with the same pool raft. In 2002, Tilberto was arrested for publicly pleasuring himself with an inflatable pumpkin. In his newest mugshot, which is available online, by the way, Tilberto is wearing a T-shirt that reads, "I'm out of my mind. Please leave a message." Clearly. Jeff, yeah. Florida or not Florida?
One would think Florida, but the inflatable raft aspect of this story. And the neighbor reusing the raft. That's, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the guy that had sex with the radiator grill of the car. This may top that though. Any port in a storm, they say, but in this case, he had a raft to go through that storm with. I'm going to say not Florida, Barry.
And you're correct too. It's Hamilton, Ohio, which is not what you would think of when you talk about having sex with inflatable pool rafts, but Hamilton, Ohio. So I'm going to assume some sort of latex or plastic fetish here.
I will bow to your better knowledge, but you could be correct.
Yeah. And I guess the inevitable question is, why not go buy rafts and put them in your house and fuck them?
There are stores that certain people that are a part of the Breaking Kayfabe community message board work at that have, dare I say, inflatable items available for purchase that this person could probably direct you to at his store. But I digress. Go ahead, Bear.
Yeah, and I think we would have to bow to his knowledge on that one, too. So, story number four. A man was arrested while riding his lawnmower, but he wasn't trying to cut his grass, local police said. On November the 3rd, around 6:15 p.m., local police noticed Kenneth Burton Aleshouse, 56 years old, was on his red snapper mower and carrying a case of beer. They said he was driving erratically on an access road. When an officer stopped him, a very strong odor of alcohol was obvious.
No!
Media release. Oh, yeah, very strong. The release did not indicate his exact blood alcohol content, but they did say it was three times above the legal limit. Three times. Aleshouse was arrested for DUI and taken to the local jail. Jeff, Florida or not Florida?
Okay, first of all, Aleshouse, Barry, Aleshouse, the Alehouse kind of gone down a little bit, the old Miller's Alehouse, don't you agree?
I would agree with that. Oh, absolutely.
That's the first part of the story. The riding mower. Riding mower's not real popular in Florida because we have such limited amount of yard space. So based on that, I'm going to go not Florida.
Jeff, incorrect, my friend. Port St. Lucie.
Well, Port St. Lucie, that's Florida. North Palm Beach, the yard started getting a little bigger.
And that's it. And it's and I would imagine Port St. Lucie, wherever the hell that is. Where is Port St. Lucie?
It's right below Fort Pierce.
Okay, gotcha.
Pierce.
Yeah. All right. Story
it's
number
where
five.
Our great Brian Last team, the New York Mets, do their spring training, Barry.
Oh, huge fan, and our old friend Peter Lederberg, gigantic Mets fan, right there. Pete is is some sort of savant, and I don't believe Pete actually listens to our show, but he is some sort of savant, and he can like recite to you stats from like 30 and 40 and 50 years ago, which to me is just absolutely incredible.
Well, so, he is a math professor.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, actually, right? He's like a math professor. So, yeah, he could do that. Story number five, Jeff, and this will be our last story of the day. Deep breath on this one, because this one is also unusual, which I'm always happy about. Two men are accused of breaking into their ex-boyfriend's home and using ragu sauce to try and burn it down, according to a local TV station. Derek Irving, 36, and John Silva, 28, were arrested after allegedly breaking into the home and stealing several items, including a flat-screen television, window AC unit, and vacuum. The victim called 911 after being alerted by security cameras of motion being detected in the house. Arriving deputies saw a red SUV leaving the area and conducted a stop. The victim told the news station that Irving was wearing a bull costume. The men initially denied the burglary, but when authorities went to the home, they found a burning pot of ragu sauce and a washcloth near the stove's burner, which appeared to be an effort to start a fire. He was trying to make it look like I left the stove on, but who gets up at 2 a.m. and fixes sketty? The victim said. Now, I'm actually quoting that one. Who wakes up at 2 a.m. and fixes sketty? Both men were charged with unarmed burglary, grand theft, and arson. So, Jeff, you've got two guys breaking into their ex-boyfriend's home, one wearing a bull costume. They steal a bunch of electronics and then try to start a fire with ragu spaghetti sauce. Jeff, and who fixes sketty at 2 a.m.?
All valid questions. However, before I get to the details of this story, Barry, ragu, yes or no?
Never.
I am a fan of Prego. Your thoughts?
So we actually, if we don't make our own sauce, and there is a vast difference, and let me say, anybody out there that ever does any cooking, if you make your own homemade tomato sauce, or as the Italians like to call it, gravy, it can be a real pain in the ass, because to do it correctly, it doesn't happen. You know, it's a lot easier to open up a jar. That being said, I've always been a fan of Newman's. And Newman's Marinara, they do one with basil, and then they do a vodka sauce. And it's reasonably affordable, and it's a high, high quality product. So I'm actually a Newman's guy.
I'm going to tell that to Mrs. Bowdrin the next time we're getting some gravy.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, on this story, I will finish the week at 2-2-1, because my friend, I know about this story. I read about this story. It is a Florida story. I believe it happened in DeLand, which is where my daughter went to college. That's why I know this story. She went to Stetson, the Hatters. And this is kind of a, dare I say, a wacky story. You're absolutely right about that. But I'm going to disqualify myself because I knew before, as you started reading the story, that this was a Florida story. So I'll finish 2-2-1 this week, Bear.
2-2-1, but the truth is you didn't cheat on this one. You knew the story. So you're actually 3-2, Jeff. I do have to give you the extra point.
So I do appreciate that. Okay, let's get back to the questions. Because some very important stuff to still be discussed here, Barry.
Sure.
Barry, Spencer Benson, there's that name again, wants to know, Barry, tell us your best and worst movie sequels of all time.
So I think this one's actually fairly easy for me as well. Best movie sequel of all time has got to be The Godfather 2. And without researching it, I would have to think that critics and maybe, you know, people that compile lists, whether it's Ranker or What Culture, whatever else is out there, would probably have to agree. And to some people, Godfather 2 is actually a better movie than Godfather 1. So I would say Godfather 2. Worst movie sequel. So on a personal level, Return of the Living Dead Part 2 was horrific. It captured none of what made the first one great. And that's my top three favorite movies of all time. If I remove that aspect, the personal aspect of it, we talked about this movie a few weeks back, Sting Number 2. Horrific. Absolutely horrific. So I would go those two right there.
Okay, the first ones that popped into my mind, Barry, because it's my second favorite film of all time, I'm going to go The Road Warrior, which is, of course, the sequel to Mad Max.
Fantastic.
Yes, and I was also thinking Godfather 2, which is, of course, sequel to the original Godfather, which is a great film. I was also thinking, oh, my God, I just drew a complete – Empire Strikes Back, which is a sequel to Star Wars. So those three – all three really good, solid films. Again, the personal love for The Road Warrior is what made it the first thing that I would think of. Now, worst, besides The Sting 2, which you're right, we talked about, Grease 2, which was completely horrible,
yes.
And Caddyshack 2 with Jackie Mason. Oh, my God. And Slapshot 2 was also completely horrific.
I don't know if I even knew that there was even a Slapshot 2.
There's actually like a Slapshot 3 and maybe 4 that are just like straight to video, complete crap fest. I think Slapshot 3 had Stephen Baldwin in it, which is
that's
a sure sign that you're dealing with a crappy movie right there. So Barry, this person, I'm not going to say who it was. Was it because I forgot his name or because he's really not that important? But a certain member of the Facebook group wants to know, Barry, if you're going for a breakfast biscuit, are you going to Hardee's or Bojangles?
Ooh, that's a tough one there. And they're both great. I got to say, I know one better than the other. And there's also childhood memories from one. I'm going to go with Bojangles because as I was going to high school again, which was like turn of the century, we would drive by a Bojangles and we would stop in and just get a shitload of biscuits on the way to school and just eat them in the car. So for me, Bojangles is going to win. I don't know if I'm overly qualified to judge because I've had Hardee's biscuits, but I don't know if I have the same passion that I had for a Bojangles biscuit.
I'm going to go Bojangles. Underrated though, Barry, Chick-fil-A. The sausage
very
and biscuit.
Excellent. Very, you know what they do, Jeff? Do those bite size where they put the chicken nugget on the biscuit. Did you ever get those?
I have not.
Oh, my God. So I want to say they even put a little honey on it, but it's a chicken nugget on a bite size biscuit. And I forget what they call them. They've got some cute name for it. You get a six pack of those. Oh my God. Are those things good? Jeff, I actually want to jump in here with a couple of questions if you're okay with that.
Well, feel free.
Absolutely. So coming from, and let's break out the meat slicing tools because I'm about to butcher this last name. Dan Circuitella asks, cashews on pizza, yes or no, Jeff?
No. No. That's
a big... Say it again, Jeff.
No.
No, because you're absolutely right.
A good cash.
Love cashews.
I have no interest in putting cashews on my pizza.
Yeah, so look, I'm 100% with you. I love cashews. I love most nuts.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
Yeah. So again, if you want to isolate that I like most nuts, you can isolate that and use that against me, much like I like cocks.
You like having nuts against your face, Barry.
Yeah, well, you know, I like nuts in my mouth, but come on, let's bring it on.
And mark that, Brian. Go ahead.
Mark that, Brian, exactly, because we'll be using that later on. But I love a cashew. You don't put cashews on pizza, Dan. No. I don't know what happened to you as a child that has caused this, but are you kidding me? Absolutely not. That's almost as crazy as putting pineapple on pizza. Next question coming from Brian Huff. I believe Brian on the board three times at this. So put this in the bank, Brian. We should be good for a while. Another excellent wrestling question. Jeff, your favorite wrestling venue ever?
I am going to say, how about we do places we've been to and places we've never been to, Barry?
Ooh, I like it.
There you go. I would say my favorite wrestling memory is Quirk and Hall. So I'll say Quirk and Hall in Tokyo, building that I never went to that I would have loved to have gone to. I'm going to say the old City Auditorium in Atlanta. I never went there. I would have loved to have gone to see some Georgia wrestling back in the day before they moved on to the Omni. Barry, your choices?
Yeah. So to that end, so I was at both in Atlanta. I went to one or two cards. I believe it was two cards in the old Atlanta City Auditorium. And at this point, they were doing not every card, but I guess they were doing special bigger cards in the Omni. And I saw two cards in the Omni. The old Atlanta City Auditorium was actually a pretty cool venue because it gave the appearance of being a really older venue. That was pretty cool. So I'm actually going to piggyback on what you just said. If there was one place I could see a card that I've never seen, it is Cork and Hall. And when you asked that question, that was the immediate thing that came to my mind. So my favorite place for ever seeing a card, I'm going to say in my heart, it's the old Miami Beach Convention Center because I saw hundreds of shows there and hundreds of cards there. So to me, that was almost a second home. However, my absolute favorite was the old Miami Marine Stadium, just based on how unique it was. A, you sat outdoors. This was an outdoor stadium. The wrestling ring was on a barge in Biscayne Bay. So the actual seating was on land, but the barge was in the water and the ring was in the water. And it was the most unique place to ever see a wrestling show. I looked forward to it every time. It was so cool. It's still there. I believe they've been going through some sort of renovation process and trying to get funding for it to save it as a landmark for the last decade. And I believe they're actually cleaning it up. And Miami's own Gloria Estefan is actually, I believe, the chairperson of this. Jeff, have you ever been to if not a wrestling show, have you ever been to a concert or any sort of event at the Miami Marine Stadium?
I have not. I did hit Ocean World when it was still open here in Fort Lauderdale.
Right down the street. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question for you about Miami Marine Stadium. I recall you telling us a story about being, I think you said you were at a show where Tiger Hattori was tossed into the water. So was that a regular occurrence if you went there more than once? Was that a thing where every card someone got thrown in the water, or was that just a one-time thing?
Yeah, so no, it was something that either if a guy didn't go in the water, then they were teasing somebody going in the water. So Tiger Hattori and our friend Peter Lederberg also has photos of this where they're actually fishing him out of the water. And I want to say it was either Graham or Kern, and it was probably Steve Kern that threw him in the water. And then Killer Carl Cox almost went in numerous times. And I remember at one point, I want to say it was February because it was really cold out, and Cox is outside and he's wearing long johns, which really went with the gimmick. He was a heel. He was crazy. So he's wearing these long johns and he almost went in the water. I believe Tiger Conway Jr. went in the water once, which was unusual. He was a baby face, so that didn't always happen. And even Dick Slater as a heel, I believe, also went in the water once. So it did happen several times. What a unique venue. Last time I was there, 90, 91, and I went and saw a concert with my family, and it was July the 4th of 90 or 91, and that was the last time. I see photos all the time now, and the place, it's spray painted, it's been vandalized and trashed. I know they're trying to clean it up. Such a great venue and so unique to South Florida. And Jeff, so I'm going to ask you a question. This just comes from a listener and your co-host, Jeff. We discussed from Dan Circuitilla's question, Jeff, what would be your favorite nut?
I think I'm going, I'll go with your cashew. I like a good cashew. I like a good, crumpled pecan on top of some banana bread, Barry. Have you ever had that?
Oh, absolutely. So pecan, both cashew, really the truth is there's only one nut I'm not crazy about, and it's the almond. Though if you encase it in chocolate, I'm a huge fan of that. But on its own, for some reason, I'm not really attracted to the almond. I love the cashew. I like the peanut, pedestrian as it might be. I do like a good peanut.
Barry, back in the day, my mother, the sainted Mary Bowdrin, loved a good boiled peanut. That was a staple of every roadside stand in South Carolina growing up. You see the boiled peanuts for sale. Have you ever had a boiled peanut, Barry?
I have, and I've exactly what you just said too. I've stopped on roadside stands, and I've gotten boiled peanuts. What's this deal, Jeff, with boiled peanuts in Pepsi? You're aware of this?
I will have to bow to your better knowledge about that. I'm not familiar with
so
that.
So this is a question for our Southern listeners, and God knows we have quite a few. People take boiled peanuts and they put them in a Pepsi. And apparently it's a staple of the Deep South. I've never done it.
I may have to reach out to my old friend Scott Hudson from down in Atlanta, Georgia way, and a former WCW host, and ask him as a son of the South also if he knows what the deal is with boiled peanuts and Pepsi.
Yeah, I'd be curious as well. Moving on, Jeff, I've got a couple more here. Coming from Michael Herrick. Favorite Little Debbie hostess or tasty cake treats?
Okay, I'm going to offer a choice on both of them. I like a good peanut butter bar. I like the peanut butter, the wafer with the three layers of peanut butter and the little wafer on Little Debbie side. I like those two things. On the tasty cake side, I like a good tasty cake breakfast. What do you call the cinnamon? Like the coffee cake, you know, like a Drake's coffee cake. But the tasty cake coffee cake is very good too. Barry, your thoughts?
Absolutely, too. So I am going to piggyback on what you said. With Little Debbie, it is the peanut butter crunch bars. I'm 100% about that. Moving on to tasty cake, the peanut butter, there's a theme here, peanut butter candy cakes. If you've ever had these, I can go through an entire box of these in one sitting. Lastly, from Hostess, Ho-Hos. I love a good ho-ho. Jeff, may I
share? Who does not love a good ho-ho?
I share a disgusting food story with you from 1986.
Does it involve a hoe or a ho-ho?
It involves the double. Well, to that point, it involves all three. It involves a hoe and a double hoe.
Oh.
So, yes, because I was living with this young lady, and she was a bit of a hoe. I take that. She was a hoe.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, look, we were together for 3 years, so absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I was living with a young lady, and we had a box of ho-hos in the kitchen. And dare I say, and I will go on record, that I was inebriated and under the influence. And all of a sudden, the munchies struck me like a ton of bricks, and I said, I got to fucking get something quick. And I ran into the kitchen. I did not turn on the lights. And I probably ate three or four of these ho-hos, just shoving them in my face. As this was happening.
You like a good ho in the face, do you, Barry?
I enjoy a good ho. I find it's necessary to have a good ho in the face.
And
as this was happening, I noticed that the wrapper was moving. I turned on the light. Oh, yeah. I turned on the lights. And there were ants, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't 5 or 10 ants. We're talking hundreds of ants completely on every ho-ho and wrapper in this box, meaning I just consumed probably hundreds of ants.
Well, help you lose a little weight down the road.
Yeah, well, so, you know, what do you do? So I call her in so she could witness this, and then I wash my mouth out, and then I go brush my teeth for 4 hours. Jeff, may I share with you my most disgusting food story of all time?
As a matter of fact, I think that is a question that was asked by someone else. I believe Jeremiah Scott wanted to know, Barry, since we're asking this, to tell us your most disgusting restaurant story tie-in so we can incorporate that all together.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you three. This one, though, this is not a restaurant story. Well, it is, but it's not one that I worked at. It was just a disgusting story. So there was a period in the 80s, Jeff, that is a bit of a blur to me because things that are now legal in many states were not legal back then. But, no. You know, growing up in Florida and finding square grouper on the beach all the time, I did partake quite a bit. And
you were a fisherman.
I was a fisherman who smoked it up back in the 80s, Jeff. That would be absolutely correct. So to that end, I was pretty stoked one day, and I ordered some Chinese food.
Was they smoked or stoked?
Either one. And the Chinese food showed up, and I dug into this food like no one's business. I had a serious case of the munchies going. And I'm halfway through, and I look, and there is a large cockroach.
Oh, in my food. That's not good.
And it's not. So I got to admit, I stopped eating. I went
that's
again.
That's good that you stopped.
Yeah. And this is what was happening was a lot of these Chinese restaurants in New York City, they keep all the ingredients in bowls and then just empty the bowl and stir fry it up. So I'm sure something crawled in. It was dead. But I had a stir-fried roach. So, you know, again, I get back, I wash my mouth out, I brush my teeth. But if there was one thing, I said, what are the odds that there were two roaches? Probably not good. So I did feel a little secure because I may have eaten a roach. I wasn't sure. That was the most disgusting thing as a diner in getting food from a restaurant.
So, Barry, is there a difference between eating a roach and smoking a roach? That's what I think people are wondering at this point.
Huge difference right there.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. So I will give you three quick stories and I will make them super quick, of the most disgusting thing I ever saw while actually working in a restaurant. Tavern on the Green, 1984. In Tavern on the Green, which is one of the largest restaurants in the country, and at one point, and may still be, did the most volume of any restaurant in the United States, we had a guy named Oscar that worked there. And Oscar looked like Shrek. He was disgusting. He was, and not that Shrek's disgusting, but Oscar was dirty and foul. And I went into the bathroom. I had to take I had to do something. So I open up the bathroom stall, and there is Oscar sitting on the toilet, his pants down around his ankles, his underwear visible. Don't make me describe what was on the underwear, Jeff, because you'll never. Exactly. What makes this the most disgusting thing ever, Jeff? He was eating a huge plate of food as he was taking a gigantic shit on the toilet.
I think they call that a Cleveland steamer, don't they?
I don't know, but holy fuck. Did I walk out of there I was 19 years old. I walked out of there traumatized, Jeff. I got to tell you, I walked out and I was like, I think I got to go home. I don't know if I can fucking function again. In about 10 years after that, around 94, 95, I was working managing a restaurant on the Upper East Side of New York. One of my waiters comes up and says, well, we got a problem in the toilet downstairs. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, come downstairs. I go downstairs. There is a giant sewer rat swimming around the toilet.
Oh, my.
So that's not super disgusting, but it was unique because he said, I have a habit of not looking before I sit. Imagine if I had sat on the toilet. And at that point, we all were like, I will never sit on a toilet the rest of my life, would not actually looking to see if something's in the bowl, because, yeah, that would have happened. The most disgusting thing I ever saw, I worked for this guy. He has since passed on, and he owned a restaurant in Miami Beach, North Miami Beach, called the Prince Hamlet. And he passed away a few years ago, I believe, of cancer. He was not a good guy, and I was never a fan when I worked for him. I saw a lot of things. He did something terrible, and I'm going to tell you straight out that this was terrible and highly unethical and illegal, but he would serve veal, and he would call them veal cutlets, when in essence they were pork cutlets. And there's the texture and the taste can be really similar, and he would take pork cutlets and pound them really thin, deep fry them, and serve them as a veal schnitzel. And it's highly illegal. It's highly unethical. If you have somebody who can't eat pork for religious purposes, that's just a terrible thing to do. So I wasn't a fan of this guy, but he used to have a salad bar, and it was a salad bar of epic proportions. It was all kinds of meats, salads, cheeses, fruits, you name it. He was putting it on the salad bar, and he would go to these cut rate food stores and buy expired product and put it on the salad bar. And the majority of his diners were all tourists. Majority were German tourists. So he really wasn't concerned with giving people food poisoning. And you just talk about being wrong on so many levels. So he used to put all these different meats and stuff that had expired a week or two earlier under the guise of, oh, we'll put it in a salad dressing, it'll be delicious. So one day he comes on and he's picked up these fruit juices from like Costa Rica or somewhere, and the fruit juice was the color of mud, meaning that it expired. And I'll never forget this. So he takes out two of these bottles of fruit juice, and he pours a glass for he and the chef, and he takes a sip, and in his voice, which was this raspy kind of high-pitched voice, he's going, oh, it's delicious, it's delicious. And they both take a sip, and within 1 minute, they're both vomiting. And we're sitting there, and the entire staff is witnessing this. And we're watching this, and he said, oh, we must have some sort of reaction to this. Put it on the salad bar. Put it on the salad bar. And I never forgot that. So those are, I've got, you know, obviously, like, I spent 30 years in the restaurant business, so I have a ton of stories. But those are three that when I saw this question that immediately just stuck out to me.
So I will say that, first of all, after that last segment, it's the first time we've used the term sewer rat and Cleveland steamer. Nice. Barry and I always keep track of words that are used for the first time. So I will tell you a non-comparable, my gross restaurant story. I was working as a busboy in a Chinese restaurant. We're talking circa 1979, 1980. And it's where I first experienced Chinese food, which I still love to this day. But this particular owner was, dare I say, Barry, a tad on the cheap side. And one of the things they would do to serve money or to save money is when the waiters and waitresses or the bus staff would bring in plates of food that, you know, the patron had left, and they're putting the food on the where the dishwashers, you know, scrape off all the food and put it in the machine. So they go in there, there's a cup of white rice, and the cup of white rice, you know, of course they pack it in, they put it in a bowl. And so it's got like a little, like a dome shape to the rice. And you've seen it 1,000 times if you've ever been in a Chinese restaurant. So the person, when they took it off the table, there was like a scoop of like maybe 1 or 2 spoonfuls out of the rice, but the rest of the rice still was like the dome was half. It was half a dome, was half packed. And the owner of the restaurant went on to that place where they put all the dirty dishes, picked up the bowl of rice, went over to where the cooks are, and dumped the rice back into the pot. That was a little disturbing. And I've never been a fan of white rice at a Chinese restaurant ever since then, Barry.
Yeah, so that's a great point. So I worked for a guy in New York that would recycle the bread and the butter. And he would take the butter, and because it was scooped out butter, and they would actually put it back in a big tub and then re-scoop it and serve it. How Yikes. Terrible is that?
That's some nasty shit right there. Okay, Barry. Yep.
Well, I have one more for you, and then I'm to and this one I liked a lot, and I'll tell you why, because we actually discussed this yesterday, and this person doesn't even know it. We actually talked about this on the episode we recorded yesterday, which is the Unsolved Mysteries episode. Our buddy Tony Erba, coming from the other Florida, which is Ohio, asks, what was Florida like before the Mariel boat lift, Jeff?
A whole hell of a lot different than it is today. I can tell you that it was, you know, I still have pictures when I was in middle school, which to some of you folks out there is called junior high school, seventh and eighth grade. And the truly amazing thing is the school was, you know, you had your black kids, your white kids, your whatever. But as I look back, and I actually still have one of my yearbooks from like eighth grade, there is not one single Latin kid in the whole school. It's absolutely amazing because now, of course, the area has been so, I don't know if this is a word or not, Latinized. You know, Latin culture is such a part of the community. Now, don't get me wrong. I was in Fort Lauderdale down in Miami. I'm sure there were still, you know, many people of Cuban descent from, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis and people that had fled when Batista was overrun by Castro. But the Latin culture and the Latin population had not really got into Fort Lauderdale yet. So it was just amazing to look back. And that was like 1975. So there was no Latin kids or whether it be Cuban, Puerto Rican, you know, from Dominican Republic. None of them were in my school, Barry. I don't know how it was for you up in the old Hollandale area, but in Fort Lauderdale, where I went to school, there was literally no Latin kids.
Yeah, so it was less about the Latin kids coming into the school, and it was more, and it was the story that I told yesterday of it with a guy with a machete running through Burdines, and that was kind of what was happening. The places that you went that were very safe, and again, you know, the Mariel boat lift, take all politics out of it, but essentially there were a lot of people that were in mental institutions that were released through the Mariel boat lift. So look, I'm all for, you know, people coming to our country. That's what America was built on. At the same time, some of these people were very dangerous criminals who were mentally disabled or just completely insane. And you know, murders went up, obviously, but stories of guys, you know, just knifing people and knifing strangers all of a sudden. So the crime went up dramatically when that happened, too. And it was a little scarier because, again, I was, you know, 16 years old, 17 years old when this was occurring. And, you know, you were going to places like your local Bojangles, and all of a sudden there were people just, you know, knifing each other in these restaurants and stuff. So a little frightening. Jeff, I don't know if you've noticed this, but As we're doing this, I'm keeping an eye on the Facebook page, and there are a lot more questions that are coming in. So I don't know if we're making this a 4-hour episode or not.
No, but, we're not going to do it, but we'll definitely do a. I think maybe in the next episode we record, we will answer some more questions that we do not have the chance to get to, because I quite frankly, I see some people that have chimed in. Dare I say a tad late, because I gave them 12 o'clock deadline. But there's some there's some good, definitely some good questions that came up. So maybe next episode we can include, as we finish out the show, we'll include some of the. So don't think your questions have been forgotten, especially you, James Knight, who asked a good Nick Cage question.
Yeah, exactly. I just saw that. And then Tony Cherichetti. And I'm what do you guys rate The Ultimate Warrior? That's a great one, too.
Yeah. So anyway, so let me just get back to the last of my questions, Barry. Benji Fido wants to know, better De Niro performance, we talking Taxi Driver or Deer Hunter?
Benji Fido, who I believe does the movie quote of the day, so he's a huge movie guy. As great as he was in The Deer Hunter, I kind of think Taxi Driver is the apex for Robert De Niro.
Yeah, no, I trust me, Deer Hunter is one of my top five movies of all time, and I loved him in that. But as far as a singular performance, Taxi Driver is definitely a better choice. He's better in Raging Bull. I just happen to personally like Deer Hunter because it's a movie I remember when I very first got cable. And I love the movie. De Niro's performance in Taxi Driver, though, was better. Barry, I don't know whether or not this will be one you can handle or if it's strictly for me. Spencer Benson, there's that name again, says, who is your most disliked sports team? Barry, you got one?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, too. So, again, it's I'm more of a basketball and, you know, more than any of the four major sports, I follow basketball. That being said, I hate the fucking Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I think Jamie Ward will be very happy to hear you say that, as he posts more anti-Dallas Cowboys shit than any person I've ever seen. It's actually pretty good. So is that just your singular choice? You got any for basketball or the other sports?
Yeah, so for basketball, I probably hate the Houston Rockets, and a lot of that goes back 20 something years ago with the Knicks and Rockets rivalry, and it always hurt me. I don't like the Rockets currently. I like James Harden. I think he's a very talented player, which he obviously is, though he chokes in the playoffs every year, but there's a certain arrogance to the Rockets currently, which I felt they also had years back, and it would probably be the Houston Rockets. I don't see myself ever rooting for them. I also hate the Miami Heat. I liked the Miami Heat when I lived in Miami, and then once I left Miami, I was living in New York. I hated the Miami Heat, and I still to this day I can't stand them. The coach is a very good coach, though. I have no problem with Eric Spoelstra. Though I hate him, I can also recognize that he is a quality coach. I think sports rivalries are a lot of fun, for the most part. So I would definitely say that. As far as baseball, that's a tough one for me because I guess the Boston Red Sox, and I'm sure I'm going to catch a lot of shit because we have some great Red Sox fans in our group, but I was a huge Yankees fan. I was there the year that they were going to the World Series and winning in the 90s. I went to a lot of games, so the Red Sox was a natural rivalry. I don't think I have any issue with any team for hockey, though.
Okay, I'm going to go baseball, St. Louis Cardinals, because
you're the biggest Cubs fan ever.
Yeah. So, and of course, my dad's a huge Cardinals fan. So me and my dad love giving each other crap about our baseball rivalry. Football, I'm going Green Bay Packers. And I'll tell you a cute little funny story. My daughter's one of her really close friends is named Rachel Clark. And Rachel Clark is a huge Packers fan. And Rachel Clark posted on Facebook a little shit about my Vikings. Give me some crap. And when they played, which will now be a couple weeks ago at the time of this taping, the Vikings laid the proverbial smackdown on the Packers, and I have not heard from Rachel Clark since then. Dead air silence. So that's awful fun, especially when you win. When you lose, you got to hear all the noise talk to you. But that being said, I think my most hated team, the team that I want one of my teams to beat more than anything, Notre Dame can go 1-11, and as long as they beat the fucking University of Michigan, I am happy. I hate nobody. I hate the Michigan fucking Wolverines. So the old Michigan man thing. Well, guess what? They lost to Notre Dame. They lost to Ohio State. He beat Michigan State. So I think Jim Harbaugh is like 1-9 against his team's principal rivals. So that does not make you a great college coach. So, but it's a great question. We thank Spencer for that one. So then the aforementioned Jeremiah Scott wanted to know, thanks a lot for this, Jeremiah. What are your most upsetting Vikings losses? And now I got to think about this, and my blood pressure goes through the roof. And Jeremiah, now you piss me right off. Okay, now I'm going to answer the question. 1975. I'm a 14-year-old kid, and the Vikings are playing at the hated Washington Redskins, and it's at RFK Stadium. It's 31-30, and Fred Cox, number 14, the straight-ahead kicker for the Minnesota Vikings, is all lined up to kick the winning field goal, and the Vikings are going to walk out with a big victory, and Fred Cox blows the kick. That's one. Let's see. I would say the 2000 NFC Championship game versus the New York Giants. They got completely pasted by the New York Giants, which the Giants were a good team, but they had Kerry Collins as their starting quarterback. We should have never lost that game. You know, somebody said, it might have been Mark Hertwick, said, well, of course, it's going to be one of the Super Bowl losses. You know, I would say of those losses, the one that probably upset me the most was the very first game. I was like an 8 or 9 year old kid when they lost to the Chiefs, and they had Joe Cap, and they got their asses kicked by the Chiefs. That was kind of really disappointing. You know, by the time, it's like being a Buffalo Bills fan when you're in that third or fourth Super Bowl and you lost again. It's like, yeah, here we go again. You know, so I'll say my third would be the Super Bowl loss to the Chiefs. So that's the answer to that question. Barry, any more questions you want to ask before we start wrapping up shop here?
Now, we probably should save my, I tell you what, that Ultimate Warrior question that Tony Cherichetti asked, that's a great question too, but we can save all these.
Here's another one. We'll save the next one. Barry, give me your top five game shows by Ryan Damon. Ryan, we're going to save that one because that's a great question. If Brian Huff wants to ask, paper or plastic, Barry, then we'll wrap up shop.
We're talking about bags from the grocery store?
I think we are.
So environmentally correct answer would be paper. However, plastic, what a convenience with the handles, the plastic. I love it.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, Barry, do you know what time it is, my friend?
Yeah, it is. Well, geez, we already did. A minute.
It's time for the return. Special edition. F, marry, or kill. Oh, we brought it back. The fans have demanded it, Barry. Are you ready to play F, marry, or kill?
I'm not just ready. I'm really excited now.
Yeah, that's what happens when you start considering some of these ladies.
Exactly.
Barry, we're going to go early 80s for this question. So I'm not talking now. I'm talking about back in their prime in the early 80s. Barry, you're going Adrienne Barbeau, Natasha Kinski, or Nicolette Sheridan? Boom.
Wow. So I'm going to, and I'll break this down for you. So I'm going to kill Nicolette Sheridan.
Okay.
Because while I found her attractive, and she was in The Sure Thing. Do you remember that?
I do. She was The Sure Thing.
Yeah, she was it. That's a movie we've never talked about.
Yeah,
it was a great movie. But something about her after that, she became horrifically annoying. Adrienne Barbeau, and let's be frank and graphic with this, top five pair of breasts in the history of film movies.
They're real and they are spectacular.
They were
back in the day.
She was, her body was what I think every heterosexual male or lesbian would dream of.
Her wet dress in Swamp Thing.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm – yeah, they were just stunning. I want to say she was topless in something because I remember there were photos that were out there. And there's a wrestling connection there. You know that, right?
Oh, please share with us.
She was based out of San Francisco, and she was Miss whatever the television station's call letters were. And she was a period where I don't know if it was through Roy Shire or through the TV station, but they had a Miss like KTVT or whatever it was called. And she was one of these girls at one point. And then, of course, married to John Carpenter for years. But, you know, physically, she's incredible. I got to say, though, so I'm going to kill Nicolette Sheridan. I am going to F. And I'm going to savor every second of that F with Adrienne Barbeau. I'm going to marry Nastassja Kinski because I got to say, I had a huge crush on Nastassja Kinski in the early 80s. And I don't know if that ever truly ever went away. So I will marry Nastassja Kinski.
I think this is the first time it's ever happened. I'm going to absolutely agree with your choices, Barry.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why. Nastasia Kinski. Barry, did you happen to have, as a youth?
Yes, I did, Jeff, and I know exactly what you're going to say.
I had the poster with the snake.
Yep, I had it on my wall. It may have been, I think, that and that we've talked about, obviously, the iconic Farrah Fawcett poster, which we both had as well. I think those were the only two posters that like that. But that Nastasia Kinski thing, hey, she was beautiful.
Yes.
Have you seen the movie Cat People lately?
I did see that, yes. No, not lately. I saw it back in the day, though.
Yeah, because it was playing on cable a couple of months ago. And, there was just something unique about her and alluring about her. And I was just always this fan. It was, you know, I guess she wasn't what we thought of as typical, but that photo with the snake. And was that a Richard Avedon photo? I know it was a famous photographer.
That was such an iconic photo of her and the snake. That if I'm able to find it for the those unaware, we will post it in our Facebook group, Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. Barry, that's about it, huh?
Wow, so that was pretty good. Yeah.
And we will come back next week with still more questions that we didn't get a chance to answer today. So if we didn't get to your question, please don't get upset and say, "Oh, you guys never answer my questions." Not that there are people that are like that, but, you know, I would encourage you to follow me on Twitter at Bowdrin and Jeff, Breaking Kayfabe, a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, and the great Brian Lath. Until next week, have a good one, folks.